is no better place.
It's time to talk.
The only way to get anything done in Cork is down to the Neil
Prendeville.
Here you go.
Fair play.
Talk to Neil Prendeville.
That's a Cork threat at this stage, I think.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I just love Cork people.
Conversation that matters.
What's not to love about Cork people? Get involved in the conversation. Text 0868104106. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. Of course, there's been a lot of political shenanigans over the past few days, past few years, past few decades, I know. I'll come to that in a moment, but the front of the Echo today talks about a story that hasn't gone away, you know, Abbeville House above in the Fermoy direction, because families moved in there yesterday. They went through a back door. 52 people seeking international protection arrived at the accommodation centre at lunchtime yesterday, front of the Echo, and they were escorted in by local Gardaí. The Public Order Unit were there as well, and they're now suggesting that perhaps it will be the Gardaí that will have to do this to move the protest away to somewhere else. Now, these are families with children, not single male international protection order individuals, but families with children. So that's a front page of making the Echo today, while at the same time, the Irish Times has a new survey out where they say that 73% of Irish people surveyed have a positive attitude to immigration. Immigration comes in different forms and fashions, of course. A lot of immigration would be people coming to Ireland to make their lives a better place, to make Ireland a better place, to work and rear families here, and to, as they say in the research, to enhance the country's cultural life, and it would be enriched by other people coming here to live. I think we're all pretty much okay with all of that if people are pulling their own weight and getting on with life. The issue, of course, that some people would have, and an ever-growing amount, is with regards to refugees and asylum seekers. I get that. So that's why I was kind of interested to see that they said that 73% of Irish people reported feeling positive about immigration. Three quarters of people agree that Ireland should help migrants seeking protection, regardless of whether they come from Ukraine or indeed are asylum seekers. So that seems very, very high. You know, considering like this program and others like it tend to take the temperature of the public, I wouldn't have thought it would have been that. They also say in the research that the figure dropped somewhat in the back 6 months of 2023. But it'd be interesting to see if it were done now as we head into the end of March 2024. But there you have it anyway with regards to high numbers. Siam, the one and only, is the front page of Making the Sun. If Leo Varadkar was the youngest Taoiseach, well, he's going to be eclipsed by Simon Harris at the age of 37. He's saying that he's overwhelmed by the support he received from his party. But there are some, like the Mail this morning, is suggesting that he'd been working on this for a number of weeks, and he'd been working on it with Phil Hogan, the former EU commissioner who had to fall on his own sword, or was pushed actually because of Golfgate. They're saying that Phil Hogan was advising Simon Harris, the Taoiseach in waiting, for several weeks in advance of the resignation of Leo Varadkar. And you have to ask, you heard the news there at 9 o'clock saying, is there another reason? Is there something coming down the track as to why Leo Varadkar resigned? And this kind of, for me, when I read that, it adds a bit of fuel to the fire as to how would they have known weeks in advance that, you know, Leo Varadkar was going to make this bombshell announcement that he was quitting. Pressure on Harris now to reshuffle. I don't like the word coronation. It sounds awfully regal to me, but there it is nonetheless in the front of the Independent. So I imagine that many people who have ministerial portfolios are probably doing a bit of quaking in the boots or the Louis Vuittons or whatever it is. Because usually when somebody comes in to take over at the helm, they will make changes, sometimes just for the sake of making changes. So who's safe and who's not? I would suggest that the people who are probably unsafe are maybe those that Simon Harris didn't get on with. But it's no joking matter, really, you know, the state of Irish politics and the chaos involved in, you know, leaders and coalitions and, you know, retirements and resignations. You know, it's not very good. It doesn't really garner a lot of confidence. Sure, it doesn't. A tired Leo Varadkar makes this morning's Sun. He's really and truly just kind of, he's digging in with regards to the reasons why he's quitting. He gives an example in the Sun this morning. Says, I left Leinster House. This would be the night before he tendered his resignation or decided he was going to quit. I left Leinster House at nearly 10 p.m. I went home, ate a takeaway, had a chat with my partner, went to bed, got up at 7:15 to get a plane at 8 o'clock. He was off to Brussels. You know, you don't need to do that forever, he says. That's not healthy anyway. going home and eating a takeaway at 11 o'clock at night. It's just not good for you. So a tired Liver Radker says the years of early mornings and late nights have took their toll. And maybe that's all there is to see in this. Maybe there is literally no more. But as with everything, other people have different agendas and you have all sorts of theories, conspiracy or not. So there you have it. Well, undoubtedly, if something else will be broken, it could well be over the weekend. But for me anyway, I think that's probably it. There probably is no more to see. Anyway, your thoughts are welcome on that text, 0868104106. The Tregumna 10 make the papers this morning because 10 of them appeared at three different court sittings yesterday, charged with conspiracy to import drugs into Ireland. All of their faces and everything, some of them covered, some blocked out with their hands, others with their T-shirts and jumpers up over their faces and what have you. They're all on the front of the Examiner this morning. And at the same time then, very interestingly, you talk of everything being local. All of this money, you know, over 220 million was spent on improving and upgrading the Dunkettle roundabout and the junctions and all the new spine roads off it. And that was just the upgrade, 220 million. But yet the Examiner is saying this morning, the traffic gridlock is even worse since the so-called, in inverted commas, improvements. I mean, if you can get over the confusion of it in the first place, you're doing well. But, you know, once you manage that, the job should be oxo. But they're saying that traffic is grinding to a halt at peak times, Middleton, into Carrigtool, lots of queues then in all sorts of different directions, not just those trying to get into the Jack Lynch Tunnel. And all of that has worsened since the upgrade was opened. That's the front page you're making this morning, the back page you're making this morning's Examiner. And then, you know, with regards to the Garda, who gave the pensioner a push bike so he could get around, this is just gets more and more bizarre when you've come people coming out defending the fact that there was an investigation at all in the first place, and secondly that it took so long. Like at this stage now, you can say that Helen McEntee and Drew Harris have no problem at all with the fact that this Garda was investigated, and yet we want more common sense, right? We want common sense in the way our country is run, no matter what government department it's from, and we want the Gardaí to be able to get on with using a bit of common sense. But the guards, of course, are totally frightened about using common sense anymore, or maybe they want to be compassionate and can't because it would get them into all sorts of trouble. Like what McEntee is saying, Alan McEntee is saying, it probably took too long. But I was reading something yesterday where Drew Harris said, I don't know what they call it. They have a word for it. I can't remember what the word is. But if you look at all, they got all of these lockups, right? And in these lockups, in Garda stations and, you know, headquarters, and maybe Anglesey Street would be a good example, they've got lots and lots of money in there. And it's seized money, right? They've got lots and lots of drugs in there. Lots now. And they'd have watches in there and phones and all sorts of things. And Drew Harris is saying, you have to keep everything safe. You know, and everything has to be accounted for. It's no different if it's a couple of hundred grand in cash or a push bike. So make up your own mind on that one. But they were busy, the Garda Síochána, over the St. Patrick's weekend. See this, they give some examples of lunatics on a road. A character on the N3 up around County Cavan, big blitz on drink driving and people on their phones and speeding, 209 kilometres an hour in a 100 kilometre zone. 1,800 people were detected and stopped for speeding during the period, and 170 of them got fixed charge notices for using mobile phones while driving. There is an ever increasing call that people who are using mobile phones while driving should be treated the very same as a drink driver or a drug driver. I'll tell you more about that, about an experience I had heading west last weekend with the driver behind me on a mobile phone, holding the mobile phone with two hands perched up on top of the steering wheel. I jest you not. And she drove like for easily 15 or 20 minutes behind me, completely oblivious to all other traffic. I mean, it's just insane. But you know, driving, how many of you out there, right, would prefer good old-fashioned buttons in your motor car dash as opposed to, what's the word they use now? Do they call them infotainment systems, right? Which is completely touch screen now. I find them very annoying. I really and truly do, because sometimes you're banging the damn thing, or you're swiping it, or you're trying to scroll it up and down. You're trying to drive a car at the same time. Very distracting. And I think I'm not alone. Most people would prefer if their motor cars went back to buttons, good old fashioned buttons, because we get overwhelmed with the touch screens. And it's very, very dangerous. What Car magazine did a survey on this. They said 60% of prospective buyers of a motor car would be put off buying the car because it had too many touchscreen controls over physical switches. And if anything, the physical switches and the buttons and the dials would be much safer. You could actually work them without ever taking your eyes off the road. But with the touchscreens, don't you think They're dangerous. Papers this morning also talk about other touchscreens, and this is Apple. Now, Apple are being sued in America, according to the Mail. A landmark lawsuit against them. Why? Well, I would sum it up by saying that Apple are just doing their job too well. I'm not an Apple fan. I have Samsung. I've always had. Used a few Apple Macs. I do like them. But many people are huge followers and fans and very loyal to Apple. But they're being sued now because apparently they're being accused of being guilty of locking in iPhone customers to the Apple ecosystem and crushing competition. I mean, isn't that what all businesses endeavor to do, is to crush the competition of others who do things like you? Isn't that what capitalism is? And then one other one that makes the papers this morning regarding petrol. If you live up around the border counties, you are much better off than you are down here in Cork. If, for instance, you need to put petrol or diesel into the car, because it's much cheaper up there. It's about €1.63, I should say, for petrol and diesel. And it's much cheaper north of the border again, then. It's even 10 cents cheaper. So the border counties and the petrol stations up there have to drop their prices and sell petrol, they're saying, at a loss, just to compete with ones over the border. I find it absolutely extraordinary that in Cork you could pay one... This is Cork, right? Cork City. How close are we to Whitegate and the oil refinery down there? You could pay €1.74, €1.75 for a litre of petrol. You go into Kerry, right? And you're paying €1.71. But yet the petrol has to travel much further from Whitegate to Kerry than it does to Cork. Maybe I'm oversimplifying it, I don't know. And then other things, when it comes to common sense that people would like to see. It's a story in the UK Times this morning. It says, vandalism, fly tipping and graffiti will all be cleaned up within 48 hours of being reported, because councils now are being instructed by the Ministry for Justice to use those serving community sentences to actually do something if they've got a community sentence. And that would be, cleaning up fly tipping, illegal dumping, cleaning off graffiti. Wouldn't that be great? Part of a deal, way to deal with antisocial behaviour, you actually do something for your community sentence. And something else that's happening across the water, but this, of course, in Scotland, is that their new hate crime law comes into effect on the 1st of April. But no, it really does. It comes in on the 1st of April. And I'm wondering, would this be exactly what it would look like when our new hate crime law comes into effect? The English Times this morning says that it will have a chilling effect on the freedom of speech. Or at least they're quoting the head of complaints of the police watchdog as warning that it will have a chilling effect. It comes into effect 1st of April. It criminalises threatening or abusive behaviour, which is intended to stir up hatred against people based on age, disability, religion, sexual orientation and transgender identity. Much of that is needed, but if it goes too far, of course, people will be afraid to open their mouth. So the critics of it say that the big issue here will be this law will become weaponized and used as a weapon by trans activists to try and criminalize women who do not share their beliefs as to what a woman is biologically or gender identity wise. So that's all ahead of us, lads, because that's what's going to happen very soon, 1st of April in Scotland. And some good news for you, Peaky Blinders. You know, if you watched the last series of Peaky Blinders, we were being told there will be a film because there's unfinished business in that incredible series, Peaky Blinders, that Cillian Murphy stars in. Well, the creator of it, Stephen Knight, has confirmed that Cillian Murphy will be back in his role as the gangster Tommy Shelby in this spin-off film. Murphy's definitely on board. We're shooting in September. And we kind of got that impression from Cillian Murphy when he was on Desert Island Discs a few weeks ago. He says, if I'm asked, I'll be there. I'm in. So that's good news, isn't it? Actually, talking about great show, you know, I know there was Love Hate and everybody loved it. I've only started watching about a week ago, Kin, K-I-N. I've watched the first series. Now I'm on to the start. We're on to the start of the second series. I have to say, it's fantastic. It's an Irish production in association with Canadian television, I think. But it's an RTE production. So you have to give credit where it's due. It's a fabulous series. It's not as good, I think, would you agree with me, as Love Hate, but it's not too far behind it. It's damn good. You'd think that it might be glorifying, drug dealers and drug smugglers and criminality. It doesn't really. Shows what an awful life they have, in spite of, sack loads of money in the boots of their car. I suppose I'm not allowed to say much more about that, really, because of spoiler alerts that people get so worked up about, and I'm probably not. Am I allowed now to talk at this stage about the jury drama documentary that that made television a few weeks ago. It was a real trial. There are two different juries. No? Still not allowed to talk about that? I know. What can you do? And another thing that I'd love to talk about, it being a Friday a little later on, is this fabulous story that makes the Mail today. There are two customers in America over, well, they want to be customers in California, who are suing the French fashion brand Hermès because they've been banned from buying a Birkin bag that sell for up to €460,000 because as customers, they weren't deemed worthy enough. According to the lawsuit, customers who are not famous do not have ready access to Birkin bags, and they can't even purchase the bags online from Hermès. Apparently, you go into the store and I guess they take one look at you and they decide at that stage whether you are worthy of actually buying a Hermès bag. I don't know, is it the same for Gucci or Prada or Chanel or Dolce & Gabbana or Dior or others like that? There's one here that Claire gave me I can't even pronounce. Balenciaga. I just believe that if people have money and they worked hard for it, then they should be entitled to buy whatever they want, wherever they want. The only people that you wouldn't want buying them, people who have masses amount of money from criminality. I don't know how you'd prove that. Anyway, your thoughts on that are welcome. We'll come back to it a little later on. So only the Kate Mosses of this world or the Jennifer Lopez's or the Kim Kardashians should be allowed to buy a Birkin bag. I don't know. I mean, I think anybody should be allowed to buy whatever they want. You know, some people are saying, oh my God, it's just so naff and it's just such a sign of, you know, you're flaunting your wealth. Well, it's not actually. You know, if somebody feels better with a nice watch on their hand or driving a nice car or toting a nice bag, whose business is it anyway?
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Morning all, it's Friday morning and this time 2 weeks' time, lads. I'll be announcing the return of Free Food Friday, which will be great news for those of you that like to get food delivered. You'll have an opportunity to text again in a couple of weeks. We'll be welcoming on board Camille Thai. They are taking over Free Food Friday on this program in a couple of weeks' time, and that's something lovely to look forward to. And it's a way of rewarding loyal listeners, particularly those that are working and want to share some good food with their work colleagues. So that's in a couple of weeks' time. Welcome aboard, Camille Thai. Good to have you. Meanwhile, today, that's in 2 weeks' time, but today is Daffodil Day. It's the Irish Cancer Society's main fundraising event, and they're calling on all of us for the day that's in it to go all in against cancer. And you can also find out, I imagine many people have planned already what they're going to do today, but it's never too late. Full details on how you can donate and help can be had at cancer.ie, www.cancer.ie. But I want to chat with the Cork woman where cancer impacted on her family, not once, not twice, but three times. Natalie, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are things?
I'm well, and more to the point, how are things with you? Considering, you know, we're talking about Daffodil Day, of course, and the money that's raised every year for very important cancer research.
Yeah.
Because you know the cancer journey you went through. I was very moved by the fact that Seamus O'Reilly, your oncologist, said, if it had been 10 years earlier, things might have been very different, but it was because of the research and the work that was being done to ultimately eradicate cancer that saved your life, right?
You know, my chances, obviously, if it was 10 years previous like that, my chances weren't very good, you know.
I know.
Yeah, because I mean, we all know someone that has died of cancer and maybe someone had the same cancer as me, but died, you know, previous to that, you know. So I'm very lucky, to be honest, to be here, Neil, you know.
It totally touches all families. But I have to say, Natalie, it touched your lovely family twice, because first with your, it must have been devastating news when your husband, Dermot, presented with bowel cancer.
He did, yeah. That was back in 2012. And like that now, bowel cancer and appendicitis he got. And they did a biopsy on the appendix when it was taken out, like they do everything that's removed in hospitals. You know, they do the biopsies and they found a tumour and it had kind of spread to his bowel and stuff. So he had to have surgery and whatever. But, you know, he was very lucky. It was caught very early. You know, he recovered great from it, you know, but still it was the, you know, the fear that was there from the bowel cancer, you know.
There must have been fierce worry when you heard those two words, bowel cancer. The fact that it was so early made all of the difference.
Sure.
And did he go through chemo, radiation and all that?
He didn't, no. He was very lucky, as I said, no, it was found on time. And he kind of, he had to have surgery, to have major bowel surgery. Yeah. But he was great after it, thank God. You know, everything went well and, you know, he's here to tell the tale, you know, thank God.
And you were there for him, of course, through all of the help and recovery that he needed. And then, subsequent to that, I think you had only just pretty much just turned 40 at the time. You found a lump on your breast, was that right?
That's right, yeah. I was just after turning 40 and, found a lump in my breast and kind of got it checked. And it was, of course, Dermot was saying, you know, get that checked. And, of course, eventually I was saying, you know, I don't think it's anything. So eventually got it checked. And my doctor, now, to be fair, was she feeling what I had felt? She probably didn't. And she was saying, you know, I can't see anything, I can't feel anything. And, you know, she said, no, it's tissue, it's muscle. And sure, I ran out the door, you know. Delighted, you know, it's nothing. And I think maybe 12 months passed and I remember this thing just, you know, grew overnight. And I said, oh my God, I'm going to have to get sorted here. So I went to the doctor, back to my own doctor, and referred straight away to the breast clinic in the CUH. And yeah, within, I'd say it was any kind of 5 or 6 days a week, our world just had been turned upside down.
So you saying that it was that aggressive that the tumor grew so quickly? It was in a very short period.
Oh, it grew. Yeah, it was a very short period of time. No, I had felt it, but you know, my doctor had thought. No, as I said, I'm not blaming anyone, but she said it was breast tissue, it was muscle, and you know, I was happy enough with that. And then all of a sudden this thing just started growing months later, and I said, you know, I'm going to have to get this checked.
Yeah.
But my doctor referred me straight away. I was seen within the week and it just snowballed from there, Neil. You
awful
know,
thing just, to be waiting for results to come back, I'd say, in the first place, yeah? Awful
oh my God, it was just horrendous, you know, and then you're diagnosed. And I always remember I was up with Seamus O'Reilly one day and, you know, we knew it was breast cancer and he was kind of putting a plan in place. And he said, no, we need another scan in the morning and our next Wednesday or something. And I said, next Wednesday? I said, what's that for? He said, we just have to see, you know, where is it gone? And I said, I have to wait on next Wednesday. I said, and I don't know, is it a Cork thing? I said, you'll be taking me out of the river, you know.
Yeah,
obviously not. But, you know, I was saying, you know, I can't put up with the stress and the worry of it. And he left the room and he came back 5 minutes later and he said, I have you in the morning, get the scan done, come out. I'm in the CUH. This was in the South Infirmary. I'm in the CUH in the afternoon. He said, I'll get the results and I'll have the results for you tomorrow evening. You know, that man just went above and beyond for me because he knew the worry. I couldn't go another day not knowing whether it had spread to everywhere, whether I was okay, what was going on. And he just had all those results for me the following day, you know.
You're an incredible man. You have had experience. Many families have had experience with them. But the tears, did flow, of course. The tears did flow because then, having got the diagnosis that you didn't want to get, you then had to share with family, didn't you?
Oh, I did, yeah. You know, I'm kind of a very deep person. I wasn't, you know, I was saying, look, we'll wait for all this now. And if we have to worry people, we'll worry them when we know for certain what's going on. So I remember the morning coming back from the hospital. It was an early morning, an appointment. And they said, look, it's breast cancer. And it's this and it's that. And you're going to need surgery, chemotherapy, your hair is falling out. Like, this is just... You don't know whether you're coming or going.
Traumatic,
and and I remember saying, you know, I'll have to go to my parents' house on the way home, you know. And I remember going in the front door and, you know, my mother calling my dad. My dad was after being in bed and, you know, my poor dad, my dad had passed there, not only July gone, you know. So
sorry to hear that.
Do you know, thank you. But I remember like the tears flowing down his face and he was just... The poor man didn't know, you know, he was saying he was heartbroken for us, you know, for me.
Word,
no, he was devastated. He he couldn't, you know, something that he couldn't fix. He'd fix things all of his life for us, you know, not mechanically or not.
So he was, anything, you he know, was heartbroken and he felt helpless. Like, yeah, I know what you mean. He did.
And
yeah.
The helplessness was terrible, of course. Yeah. And my poor mother, you know, I mean, it wasn't fair. You don't want, this is not news. I mean, I don't want my kids to come into me and tell me that, you know, there's cancer or anything. So obviously, I didn't want to be telling my parents, you know. But, and normally I'm the kind of person that reassures everybody. So I had to kind of sit there not knowing myself what I was doing, but I had to reassure them that, look, it's going to be okay, you know?
Yeah, I know. Awful, awful. And on top of that, then, of course, you have your own little boys at home. They have to be told at some stage. Didn't they have to be told, yeah?
They did, yeah. You know, I had to come home then, down home. And I remember my son Luke was home from college the same day and Corey was at home. I think Billy must have been at school. So Dermot went in and they were in bed, of course, you know, because they had no school in college. And my husband went in and he called them. He said, look, come out to the kitchen. He said, myself and Mom want to talk to you. And geez, Neil, I think they thought we won the lottery or something. We were going to splash out on new cars for them and stuff.
Kids will be kids,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're off on a sun holiday. Yeah.
Of course, yeah. And they look and we just brought them in. Like, and of course, we tell them, you know, that I've had breast cancer and whatever. And of course, again, my reassurance had to kick in. I said, look, I'm going to be fine. And, you know, their faces, God love them, their faces dropped, you know, they were petrified, you know. I remember they went back into their beds, Neil, and I had to go in and kind of go into their rooms individually and, you know, just talk to them for a few minutes and say, look, sure, I'll be fine. You know, I will be fine. They're doing all this treatment, all this plan is in place. And, you know, I will be fine. And you know what? As the few weeks went on, you know, they kind of came to terms with it, but it was terrible for them, you know. It was really terrible.
But for you as well, of course, it must have been a black time because I understand with regards to your parents, and that's awfully, terribly hard to have to tell your parents that. But three little boys, you must have had an awful sense of dread, like, what if, you know, what if this is going to get me?
Oh, sure.
Who'll rear my babies, my children? They'll always be babies, you know.
Of course, because you know what? We had Luke in college, we had Corey in secondary school, you know, going into leaving cert, and you know, Billy was making his Holy Communion the following year, and I was just saying, like, geez, will I be here for it?
I know.
You know, will I get to see his Holy Communion?
I
know,
I know.
And I was saying, just get me to the communion, and sure, of course, you get to the communion, and you want to see the weddings, and you know, all the stuff down the road. You know, you just want to be able to see everything, obviously, and. You know, not sure whether you're going to be around for those things, you know, but you have to take every day as it comes.
I was reading your story and we all have those kind of markers in life that we want to achieve and tick off. And it's when the threat of it been taken away from you. But did your boys then become very protective of their mom, I wonder?
Do you know what? I'd be laughing because my middle guy, Corey, is just, he'd kill me never saying this, but like, he's as soft and he'd be ringing me. He said, Mom, you know, are you okay? And, you know, you have another chemo session now next Monday. And he'd have it all down to a T. And then Luke just kind of, I think Luke thought if he ignored it, it wasn't there, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
And I remember Luke rang me once and he said, Mom, where are you? And I said, he was working on a farm at the time. And I said, I'm up in the south infirmary getting my chemo. Yeah, Mom, I tell you now, I'm after falling off a ladder, I'm after cutting my hand, and you're going to have to come home to bring me to the hospital. I said, you are 20 years of age. I said, sort yourself out, you know, now. But we laugh about that today, you know, but talking about me,
they're amazing, aren't they, the minds of our children.
Yeah.
We were just like them at their age, I'm sure, you know.
Of course,
So, of course, Billy then, but let's not forget Billy. Yeah, how was he with the whole thing?
Oh, yeah. Do you know what? He was so young at the time, and we kind of shielded him from a lot of it, and we said, you know, that we wouldn't be telling him much. And I remember I was going in for surgery one morning, and he was staying at my sister-in-law's house, Alison's, and Alison had to ring, and she said, you know, you're going to have to come down and collect him. He's very upset. He had slept there numerous times. He loved sleeping there. And Dermot had to go down for him about 12:30 that night. And when he came home, Dermot said, jeepers, Billy. He said, what's wrong with you? He said, why didn't you stay in Alison's? And you know, it gets me to today because he said, I don't want to go to sleep because I'm afraid if I get up in the morning, if I wake in the morning and my mom is not here anymore.
God.
You know, it was, God. Oh my God, it still gets me today, you know, that kind of way. It's just, you know, so we'd kind of sit him down, reassure him, you know, that I'm not going anywhere. As simple as that, I'm not going anywhere, you know.
While you were going through this, your sister calls over as if things couldn't get any worse. Because she's found a lump as well, right? Oh my God.
Yeah. And like that night, I said, she's, you know, just go and get it checked. And she went and got it checked. And they came back and they said, you also have breast cancer. You know, now, like early detection, Neil, that's the thing then as well. Hers was very early. They were able to remove the tumour and she got radium. Now the fright was still there. The, you know, the trauma of being, you know, she's my sister's at home with breast cancer. I'm being told, and she had a little boy. God, Ronan was very young at the time. And, you know, yeah, breast cancer again. Like the two of us in the one, like as hard as it was for my parents, then like we'd go and tell them again that my sister then had breast cancer. I mean, it was just, it was horrific. You know, how, it really was.
Yeah. How did you struggle to stay positive through all of this? I mean, clearly you went through all of the chemo, you went through the radiation, you came out the other end of it. You're still probably waiting to know what the prognosis is. Like, did you have very down days, dark days?
You'd have, absolutely you would. You'd have very dark days. And then, like, it was a case of my boys were coming in. I had to be the strong one, Neil, for the boys coming in, do you know? I mean, if I wasn't strong, who, you know, who else was going to, you know, I had to kind of be positive for them, you know? And I'd never let it say, you know, that this mightn't work. I was saying, no, it is. It is going to work. It will work. It has to work. And this, you know, I have to be here for my boys.
And the trial, that you were put on at some stage. Just talk to us a little bit about that, because I believe when they put you on a trial, you don't actually know whether you're getting the trial drug or a placebo. Is that the
case?
Well,
you don't. Yeah, it was absolutely. There was like. Like I remember, they asked me, "Would I do a trial drug?" And I said, "Look, if I can help somebody, by all means, I will do it." So now, I suppose it was naivety at the time. I hadn't a clue what I was letting myself in for. So what they do is they pick, say, four or five people. And now the nurses, the oncology nurse, doesn't know either what person is getting what tablet. So they probably have four paracetamol and the actual chemo tablet, that the trial drug. So it was just by chance that I got the trial drug, and Penelope it was called. And now I knew I was on something, because it was the same kind of effects as the chemotherapy, but on a lot milder, you know. It wasn't as strong and stuff as the chemotherapy itself. So it was a lot milder. And then I'd have to go to the hospital maybe twice a week or three times a week sometimes. And, you know, get your bloods done and fill out forms and do a kind of questionnaire thing. And, but, you know, people used to be saying, oh, my, your poor thing, back up to the hospital again. But do you know what? I loved going to the hospital because it was reassurance for myself. Mm. I felt I was being minded and I was being kind of cared for when I was in the hospital, you know. So I never minded going up. No, my husband probably did mind, you know, now thinking about it. Jeez, we were up and down to the hospital two and three times a week. But yeah, like it was kind of reassurance for me, you know.
I know while all of this is going on, I'm quite sure, I'm 100% sure that Dermot stepped up and he raised to the plate, if you like, from a guy that I think couldn't boil an egg at one stage. He certainly kicked in and took over and helped you, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, he did, of course, Neil. I'd have been lost without him, you know. He couldn't boil the kettle, let alone say an egg, you know.
And Just with regards to, at some stage, did you get the all clear?
I did. Okay. I got the all clear.
And
then,
can I just ask you about that? Did your body tell you that you were getting better, or was it maybe an oncologist, or did you have to be told by the medical profession? I mean, did your body show any signs that you were getting better?
No, not really. You know, you'd still, Neil, you'd always have a fear. You'd always, I remember Seamus O'Reilly's just saying to me one day, you know, he said, we can't see any traces of cancer in your body, you know. So that's the all clear. Then, you know, you're just, but then, like, you're saying, yeah, that's the all clear. But then you're still wondering, Neil, you know, what if something else pops up, you know, that kind of way. So, like, you get the all clear, but do you ever get the all clear is what I'm trying to say, you know.
So, do you live with an element of worry then?
Oh, you do. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. You know, you get a pain in your shoulder or a pain in your knee, and you're saying, geez, like, that's a strange pain. Like, is that something now?
I know.
You know, like, I don't think the fear ever leaves you, but, you know, you can't let it take over either. You have to get on with things.
And did it change you from the person that you were, in the sense, do you look at things differently? Before we came on air, I was chatting with you and I said, you're the kind of person now who doesn't put off till tomorrow what you can do today. Would that sum you up, I wonder?
It would, you know, it would. I'd say, you know, before, and I remember, you know, you'd be worrying about little things, Neil, and then she's like, you'd be saying, what are you worrying about? It's like, just get on with it, you know? I mean, you can't be worrying about silly things anymore, you know? The kids are delighted. Do you know, now your mom's not giving out anymore, you know, that kind of way, because she's a bit laid back.
Mom's turning
into horizontal now.
Mom's turned into a hippie. She's turned into a hippie.
Ash, that's okay.
All
you
love,
know, now.
Love, but, cool, peace, man. Yeah, chill. Everything will be fine.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Daffodil Day is important, isn't it, for cancer research, particularly with it. You know, you think about maybe that trial drug that you were on was funded by research in the past.
Oh, well, of course it was, yeah, you know, and like Daffodil Day, I mean, they're only 5% funded, you know, the Irish Cancer Association, they only get 5% funding, Neil, from the government. Wow. So everything else that they provide for people in the worst time of their lives, you know, with the cancer diagnosis, that's all from the buckets that you're throwing a euro into. It's all fundraising, you know. If they don't have the fundraising, they won't be able to offer those things, like, to people, you know.
It's only once a year, and people can help and find out how they can help at www.cancer.ie/daffodil day. Isn't that right?
Exactly. And I mean, you can donate as little as a euro, 2 euro, you know, give up the cup of coffee and just donate. Because you don't know what's around the corner. And I mean, people, you know, people that have a cancer diagnosis, and obviously if they're not doing too well, they want to pass away at home. Like, the Cancer Association will provide a nurse, Neil, to go to their homes and, you know, let them give them their last wish let them die at home.
Yeah, they did it, you know, for my man. Nurses, it was a wonderful thing to be able to do. Yeah, you're right.
You know, I mean, like, leave those people at home. Like, you know, I mean, we just don't think of these things until you're kind of put in the position. And, you know, I mean, I'd be up in the COH getting, or the South Infirmary getting my chemotherapy. I was out into my nice cozy car, home, whatever. There's people that don't drive and they have to come out, get on a bus. Oh, I couldn't possibly imagine getting on a bus, public transport.
Heading to Skibbereen or West Cork.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's about 2,300 free lifts given, you know, every year to people with getting cancer treatment, you know, and people giving up their free time to, you know, carry people to and from hospitals. You know, we don't think of these things.
I know, it's important.
You know, so, I mean, the fundraiser for Daffodil Day is just, it's their biggest fundraiser, and if they don't get the funds, you know,
it impacts on people's lives in so many different ways. It certainly does. Well, they impacted in a positive way for you, and I'm delighted for you, Natalie, for you and for Dermot and the three boys. Live long and prosper, and thank you so much for telling us your inspiring story. Thank you so much.
No bother, Neil, anytime. Thank you. Thanks.
Bye, Natalie.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And thank you again to Natalie Cambridge for sharing her story. You can get involved in Daffodil Day for the day that is today by logging on and donating or helping any way you can. www.cancer.ie. Keep those texts coming. Text 0868 104 106. Incidentally, I talked earlier on about the newspapers. This was the printed editions of the papers that were talking about what could be happening next, is that Simon Harris would have a cabinet reshuffle. The Independent has updated this morning saying that Simon Coveney is seen as vulnerable as Simon Harris is under pressure to reshuffle his cabinet. I suppose he will have to reward some now with those who've been loyal and supporters of his, or whatever the case may be, with a cabinet or a junior ministry, but others will have to move. And they're saying that Simon Coveney could well be in Simon Harris's crosshairs
regarding a reshuffle. It proved that really that for all his own personal reasons, Leo Varadkar isn't a career politician. He thinks it's too hard and he wants to do different things, whereas Simon Coveney would be a career politician. I haven't heard him complaining or, you know, going on about how difficult the job is. He just gets on with it. So we'll have to see what happens in that regard. I was talking earlier on then about the blitz over the St. Patrick's weekend regarding drink drivers, drug drivers, speeding and idiots who use mobile phones while driving. By text to 0868 104 106. My friend got 15 month suspended sentence and 3 years off the road. He was delivering kegs to pubs in West Cork on very narrow roads and he collided with a car. There was no speed involved and it was unavoidable circumstances. It was very harsh for a man doing a day's work. Another one, that person that texted in about people texting while driving is unreal. I'm sick to death of seeing people, young and old, on their phones while driving. A study in Australia was done and it came out that nearly 90% of road deaths were caused by people on their phones. Really? The same punishment should be given to these muppets on their phones as, say, drink drivers. Love the show, says Mary Jane. I was in Sydney for 6 weeks last October, and in that time, when accompanying my daughter, driving my grandchildren to school, she was drink tested. There were four police cars, two on each side of the road, about 100 metres from the school gates. It is a regular practice there, says Mary. We were talking recently on air as to when was the last time you were stopped at a checkpoint, remember? I drive a minibus for a living, Neil. I did a test last Tuesday. Out of a line of 30 cars and vans, 23 of them, as in I did a visual test of looking at motorists. Out of a line of 30 cars and vans, 23 were on their mobile phones when I looked out the window. That was driving along by the Angler's Rest in traffic. So there you are, heads down, looking at phones. That's why we have accidents, says Thomas. Out of 30 cars and vans, 23 of the 30 were looking down at their mobile phones. Can't come on air to speak about other people's driving behaviour or habits because I'm at work, but I have stopped off to write this message because I drive for a living. Those statistics about people who use their phones while driving is a lot higher than people think. When they stop in traffic, nearly 9 out of 10 drivers use their phones, while 3 out of 5 are taking phone calls. When coming up to junctions, like not even 2 metres, a car that wants to come out will just bolt out in front of you, forcing you to slam on the brakes instead of waiting to see if the exit is safe. There are massive disregards for ignoring traffic signs, stop signs, road markings, yellow boxes. For example, when a sign says no right turn, even though it used to be a right turn, they'll still turn right. They don't care if they cause an accident. There's a massive disregard now for disabled parking bays as well that is required for a person with a disability, especially a wheelchair user. And they give the wheelchair user and their accompanying person in the car with them abuse, even though they know they've parked illegally. They're still abusive. There are also people not using correct lights or no lights at all, no indicators when turning left or right, changing lanes. Massive issue is when you're in a right-hand lane overtaking slower cars on the left, people getting right up your bumper to try and force you back over to the left lane. As soon as it's safe for you to do, you will. They speed on like hell then for no reason. So that text actually covers an awful lot of ground with regards to... I suppose it is kind of true. If you ever watch people pulling up at lights, at traffic lights, what's the first thing many, many people automatically do? They pick up and check their phone. Text 0868 104 106 back after 10.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Yeah, let me catch up with the text before the morning completely gets away from me, because one of them is important. It's the 103rd commemoration of the Crossbarry Ambush. It takes place at 1:30 Crossbarry this coming Sunday, 103 years ago this weekend. Everybody's welcome. The Crossbarry Ambush was on the 19th of March, 1921, in the village of Crossbarry, 20 kilometres southwest of Cork City. It was one of the largest engagements during the Irish War of Independence between the Irish Republican Army and the British Crown Forces. And there was a column, a flying column, I suppose, of IRA soldiers, 100 of them, under Tom Barry and Liam Deasy. And they were encircled. It was an incredible amount. I don't know where the British soldiers were coming out of, possibly Macroom, possibly Cork, possibly both. 1,200 of them. And the IRA column took them on and eventually got away. It's kind of a vague figure as to the amount of people that died. I don't know why it's so vague, but apparently Tom Barry's force killed between 10 and 30 of the British Crown Forces. And it was this time around about this time, 103 years ago, and the commemoration is this Sunday at 1:30. Talking about Drew Harris, Drew Harris said last year that any Garda that misgendered somebody would be disciplined. He backed down after realising that that was just absolute nonsense. Where are their priorities? Just to be clear, that was about misgendering colleagues within the workforce and what have you. And then a lot then to do with technology as to whether you'd prefer touchscreen or buttons, because I think the touchscreen can be very, very dangerous. Oh my God, I find myself going onto the other side of the road when I try to change radio stations. I'm also gutted that the new cars don't have CD players anymore. I know. What's the reason behind that? Nothing better than having a CD. But no, it's gone now. There were many of us were mourning when long wave was taken out and medium wave was taken out and CDs now as well. The worst thing about cars on the road at the minute are those bloody bright white LED lights. They are ridiculous. They can be quite blinding. They certainly can. I don't understand how you and others, like you, defend the Garda who took the bicycle without consent and gifted it to a friend. Oh, really? Is that what it was? A friend? I thought it was an old age pensioner. If he thought he was doing nothing wrong, then why did he not notify his superiors at the time? If Drew Harris turned a blind eye to things like this, you and others like you would be very quick to criticise him and ask, why and where does this kind of thing stop? Maybe next time he would gift somebody some unclaimed cash to a needy friend. A guard might do something like that. Well, I think you're taking it to absolute extremes. I'm talking about a bit of cop-on and a bit of compassion and, you know, a bit of common sense, that's all. I sent you a message before saying I believe that multiculturalism doesn't work. This is a text following up on some research I read out earlier this morning. And multiculturalism has been shown that it does not work. I didn't just make this up myself, you know. Can I suggest you walk along Shandon Street? You'll notice a lot of shops next to one another. You see, Neil, when you look at ghettos all around the world where people originally were very open-minded to bringing in refugees and asylum seekers, you will see people from one country all keeping to themselves. They don't want to be friends in whatever country they end up in. Shandon Street's an example of this. But yes, they do want all the benefits the new country will provide for them. I know this is a wide sweeping statement, but it's what I see. I notice it, and I can guarantee you most people, if asked, will agree with it. It's one thing to bring in different nationalities, but when it's at the cost of the Irish tradition, then I think we need to say no. I would much rather keep our heritage, but everything is being watered down to pander to every other group. Love Ireland, love the Irish people, but we are losing our identity. Happy to read that out, although I don't personally agree with every single word you're saying. I think you talk of segregation, that people who come here tend to stay in groups, and is using Shandon Street as an example of that. That may well be the case, but when you look at Shandon Street and those that are there, don't they all have shops? Don't they all work? Don't they all get up in the morning and open their front doors and wait for customers to come in? And then there's lots then following my conversation with Natalie Cambridge, a cancer survivor. Could you please tell the survivors Happy Cancer Day today? I'm a survivor and I had cancer 3 times. I had brain cancer twice. The first time was 2003 when I was 25 and 3 months pregnant with my first child. It then returned in 2007, a grade up, when I was 29. In 2019, age 41, I had breast cancer. I was given 10 years in 2007 and I was told, do not have any more kids. My son turns 15 today. Stay strong, everybody. Thank you for that inspiring text. And you are right when you say, tell people Happy Cancer Day, to those that have survived it, because people do. People like you text her, and people like Natalie as well, and indeed her sister. Back after the break.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Get involved in the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. And with that in mind, I want to welcome text 0868 104 106. I want to chat to Mary Jane O'Regan, aka Glamity Jane, the fashion blogger and influencer, busy all-rounder. Mary Jane, good morning. Are you
good morning.
Are you aware of the handbags of Dawn at Dawn story involving Birkin handbags? There's a lawsuit in America. They're being sued because they're saying they won't sell them to customers. And one example is they won't sell them to a customer unless you spend many, many thousands first buying other things before you qualify for a bag. What is this nonsense about?
I know. Do you know what? And it really is nonsense, but it has always been their policy. They're kind of gatekeepers of their brand. Now, I don't know any brand owner, and I meet lots of them in my job, who isn't very protective of their brand and who doesn't want their brand message to be very clear from what they're from what they are kind of, I suppose, what they want. So Hermès is a very, or Hermès, I suppose, is...
Hermès make Birkin bags after the...
Yes.
Jane
and
Birkin.
They, yeah. And yeah, exactly. And they had a bag called the Kelly as well. And
Kelly.
They sell accessories, like they sell belts and they sell jewellery and they sell scarves and that kind of thing. So they kind of operate like on a point system. So first of all, you have to spend a lot of money before you will get an appointment to go into a private room and view this bag. Now, the bags are between 8,000 and 460,000 euro.
460 so, grand for a bag. I wouldn't spend 460 grand on a house nor a car.
Listen, I'll tell you now, I was thinking if I had a spare 8 grand, I'd put it towards a facelift. And if I had a spare 460 grand, I would definitely buy a holiday home and I'd clear my own mortgage and get a nice car.
All right. That's so, the more sensible. But people like to treat themselves, girl.
They do. And I think, like, from okay, the first thing is, right, you could buy your holiday home in Lanzarote with a 480 and then go on to the beach and buy a fake Birkin.
That's right. Yeah, you could.
50 euro and you'd be walking around with the same thing.
The lucky
but look,
man.
I mean, look, yeah, exactly. So the Birkin bag is made from this special heritage leather and the patina is very exclusive and all that sort of stuff, which is great. But what they're trying to do, obviously, is that they want people to kind of, you know, to earn the right to carry this bag. So you'll see an awful lot of people on TikTok and you'll see an awful lot of people on social media that have managed to get a Kelly bag. But they're really all only millionaires,
yeah,
because they've bought the scarves or they're buying their bodyguards,
yeah, and the chains, yeah,
and they're, you know, and that sort of thing.
So it's like a point system, then, is it? And is it the same with Gucci, Prada, Chanel, Dolce & Gabbana?
No, Gucci and Prada, like Gucci, Prada, Chanel, you can buy in like Brown Thomas. And you know what? The thing about it is that, like, there is a designer bag that's accessible financially to everybody, well, to most people, right? I have a few kind of nice higher end bags, you know, but I'm not 8 grand.
Yeah.
You're probably talking a little bit less than that. But, you know, you can get a really nice leather DKNY bag in Brown Thomas for about 450 euro, and they're beautiful and they're so well designed and they're made from Saffiano leather and all that sort of stuff. But I think with Hermes, I think it's just, there's an awful lot of celebrities, like, you know, J-Lo carries one and a few of them. And I actually, on a personal level, think they're kind of ugly. I don't think they're nice at all.
So why do people want, I mean, like, I was thinking about this morning, and if somebody works hard or they want to have, and there may be a milestone in their life, or they just worked very hard and happen to be very wealthy as a result of it, aren't they entitled to buy an expensive watch or car ring? Or
absolutely.
Do you remember back in the day when it was cool to do so, the fur coat kind of thing?
Exactly. And you know, definitely it's a status symbol among other people. And like, you'll see, I follow this influencer and she's a Russian girl and she came from poverty and now she's a multimillionaire. And she kind of is she's a realist, but she's like, oh, I have a Kelly bag or I have a Birkin bag. And, you know, but and she got her mum a Birkin bag, but she had to buy, I had to buy scarves, I had to buy all my assistants. She was going on and on and on about this. So like, yes,
but that's kind of, that, you know, the word that comes into my mind there when you say that, that's quite obnoxious though, isn't it?
It's tacky, like, yeah.
It is kind of tacky. And, you know, you kind of wonder, why do we need to know that?
Yeah, that's it. But she was just saying what she had to do to get the Birkin bag. She was kind of saying, I've done this. This is what I had to do to get it. And she's like, yeah, it's nice, but like, it's a piece of, you know, grey leather or whatever at the end of the day. So she's showing it, like she's saying that she has this lifestyle, but she's kind of gives a real good insight into what influencers are, what wealthy people do. So she's not, you know, she's not generational wealth. So she's like, in order to fit in wealthy circles and the places I'm going and when I'm going to the Oscars and stuff, I have to have what everyone else has. So a lot of it is virtue signalling, I think, to other wealthy people, because there's nobody wants a bag that's €480 that much. I mean, it can't bring you that much happiness.
But that does make it kind of like disgusting, you know, just trying to keep up with the, you know, because somebody else has one, you have to have a better one.
It's keeping up with the Joneses. Listen, it's like, you know, my next door neighbour got their house painted there in September. I had to get my house painted then as well, because it was making my, I was there semi-detached and I'm a terrace house, and it was making my house look a bit grubby. So I said, geez, and I have a great relationship. I painted it the same color. I said, I painted the same color. But that's an element, you know, even that's an element of keeping up with the Joneses on a very normal level.
So is there like bag envy, like, or is there kind of like, it would the same be said envy, about shoes?
Oh, 100%. And like, you'll even see people at events, right? And these are kind of just normal people in Ireland. And they'll borrow somebody else's handbag for a photograph. Like, you know, you'd see them passing around the photographs. They're all posing with the thing. You know, it's bizarre stuff. Now, look, if you can afford it and it's opulent, great. But obviously these people can afford it and now they can't access it. But you could not buy PR like that.
No, you couldn't. Yeah, they must be rubbing their hands in glee. Yeah, they must. I mean, the only people I wouldn't like to see are those that maybe bought all of this stuff and this bling, and they don't really, for me, they can't carry style or fashion because they're just criminals and they're carrying and toting these kind of things.
And one of the things that you'll see we're seeing a lot now in the Criminal Assets Bureau, Neil, is that they're actually seizing a lot of these designer handbags.
They are, and Rolex watches too, aren't they, and things like that.
So, you know, like, and look, you know, it's they are becoming status symbols, and they're becoming things that, like, people are getting mugged for their handbags now and stuff like that. And to me, look, I like a nice handbag, and I'd be a person, I'd spend money on one nice handbag than be buying 7 or 8 of them in River Island. I like a nice handbag, but I just think that level, if I had that level of wealth, I couldn't say that I definitely wouldn't want a Birkin, because I don't think they're nice. It's all relative, I suppose.
Yeah, but okay, never mind about a millionaire or a billionaire, because if they tire of it, they can just get another one. But do you know they say about a boat, or they say it about a car, and I wonder if they say about a bag as well, that the happiest days are the day you buy it and the day you sell it. Like, if somebody shelled out, let's say, 40 or 50 grand on a bag, they kind of get fed up of it after a few weeks? Like,
I think from my perspective, and I'm coming from somebody that, you know, I earn a reasonable wage. Like, I'm not on minimum wage, but I'm not a millionaire, or I'm not anywhere near that level of salary either. And I always treat myself every year to one pair of sunglasses, always, every single year.
Why? Because you lost the other ones, is it?
No, I don't lose them. I keep them, but I have a sunglasses wardrobe them when I go on holidays. I'm that person by the beach. I'm like, you're one of the White Lotus, you know, with all the big sun hat and the big sunglasses and the caftan and whatever. So for me, that's what my budget can afford every year, is one good pair of sunglasses. I might buy one nice handbag, and I'm not talking about a Birkin.
How much would you spend on the sunglasses, like, though?
Well, the sunglasses, you know, they could be anything between kind of €200 and we'll say maybe €400. But like, what I'll do is I'll get a voucher from my sister for my birthday. I'll get a voucher for Christmas. I'll save the vouchers and I'll put them all towards this pair of sunglasses or a handbag or whatever. I'll buy myself one nice thing like that a year. But when you have that amount of wealth, you think you can buy everything. And what Hermes are doing now is that they're saying to people that are super wealthy, that's grand, you're super wealthy, but we want only a certain type of person or a certain level of person. So we want you to make sure that the belt that you're wearing is also Hermes, that you're not going around in a Penny's tracksuit with a Hermes Birkin. I think that's what they're trying to say, Neil, in a nice way.
I'm kind of delighted with myself, because I'm defending people who work hard. It's their own money, which they've paid their 100%. Tax on. They should be able to buy whatever they want. But I'm wondering, do people look at people with very expensive handbags? Because it's the Irish way to drag you down. And do people say, that's such a beautiful bag that she has? Or are they kind of making snide, bitchy comments about them?
I don't think so. Like, I think, you know, certainly in my friend group, you know, we'd all kind of like a nice, like some, one of the girls, Michelle, loves shoes. I like handbags and sunglasses. One of the other girls then loves shoes, but she's obsessed with coats as well. She'll always buy kind of a more expensive coat. And I think it just depends on your friend group, you know. And I think, look, I look at other people. If I saw somebody with a parking bag, I don't think they're nice, but I'd be delighted for them. I'd say, listen, great, more power to them. But, you know, buy it if you can or whatever. But equally, you can go in and you can pick something up that's DKNY and it might cost you €250 and you might feel as good about it. But I think what Birkin are trying to do, you can't buy the marketing that they're using, first of all.
Yeah.
And second of all, then I watch this woman, she's married to a Saudi guy, they live in Dubai, and she goes around and she went into a Birkin shop and they weren't nice to her, and she said, your lass, she this guy's a multi-millionaire now, they go out on a Saturday and he'd buy her a Dior bag, €6,000, not a bother, you know, or he'd buy her a diamond bracelet, €2 million. He's that kind of a fella if I know him, like, but he's that kind of a fella. And like, she went into the Hermes somewhere in Europe and they weren't nice to her, and she said, well, good luck now to you anyway, lads, you're after doing yourself out of, she didn't say it in those terms, but she was like, I will never go back here again.
And my husband will never shop here again.
So rude, yeah.
What is it that Julia Roberts did? I never saw the film, but I've seen the clip. Julia Roberts,
Pretty Woman.
What did she do again? What was that?
So she went in and she was kind of dressed in like jeans and a shirt and she wanted to buy something to go to the races, I think. And they were just really, oh, we don't have anything that'll suit you, your budget. And they were just really snidey. And then she went back in with Richard Gere and he was like, you know, you can have anything you want in the shop. And she was like, she just turned to them and said, big mistake for treating me the way you did. I'm going to a different shop. And she's actually dead right. I used to work in a designer clothes shop when I was 16. And anyone that would come in would always gravitate towards me, because anyone that didn't shop there regularly, you know, if there was a mother of the bride or something, they'd always come and ask me for my help because they were intimidated sometimes by the other people working in the shop, you know.
They thought the others might be snooty, like.
Yeah.
The snooty staff looking down at the customers.
Neil, when I worked in Brown Thomas, some of my family would say, I can't call in to see you now. You know, I can't meet you for lunch. Or I can't call in to see you now because I've no lipstick on. Or I'm only in my... I'd be like, ah, lads, come on. Do you know, that's the mentality.
There's a fashion police officer on the door of Brown Thomas.
Oh, 100%. And listen, anytime I've ever spent any amount of money in Brown Thomas, it's always been when I've gone in there in yoga pants and a fleece. And I'll go in and if I'm buying a pair of sunglasses or whatever, I don't make a big deal of it. Like, I just kind of think, okay, I'd like that out today or whatever, and I'll go in with my vouchers and I'll buy them. But I'll never feel like I have to get dressed up going in anywhere.
Let's find out what people. Actually, firstly, let's keep an eye on that court case in America. According to the lawsuit, they're saying they're not famous enough to have. But they have the readies, but they're not famous enough to be sold a Birkin bag. But also, let's see if other people would spend 10, 15, 20, 40, 60, 100, 460 grand on a bag. When you could get a knockoff, as you say, for €50. And would you, final question, would you know the difference?
Era, you kind of would when they're up close. I mean, from a distance, you probably wouldn't. But like, you're not going to get a leather bag for €50. And, you know, sometimes there can be a bit of the smell off the fake ones as well. When you get them first, they'd be a bit smelly. They could be made in a factory where there's people smoking 20 bents and hedges a day while they're making them, you know, that kind of thing. They're not the best. But look for a flash, they'd be grand.
I'll leave you on this point. There's an article in the Mail this morning saying that anyone who has ever shared a home with a teenager, you brought up the topic of smelly.
Yeah.
Anyone that ever shares a home with a teenager will know you can smell them before you see them. Scientists have now come out to say that the teenagers actually do have their own special scent, and it's not their fault. If you have a smelly teenager, it's within their hormones and their DNA. I think the only smell you would have got off me when I was a teenager was Brute. Do you remember Brute and the green bottle?
Oh my God, and High Karate.
High Karate was another one, yeah. What was it
and then
for you?
You probably graduated then, Neil, to Kouros and YSL Jazz. For me, it was Dewberry from the Body Shop. And listen, I'll tell you, you could have smelt me before you saw me too. I used to be using bottles of it. And again, now, I think maybe it's from when I was a teenager. That's all I'd want was like makeup products. And they had these little bath pearls and stuff. nostalgia all the way. And I think, or, you know, I think a lot of, there was a perfume as well that was kind of cheap called Exclamation, and everyone used to be drowned in it, and Impulse, you know. But I always say, you know, that with the teenagers and stuff like that, a lot of it is that they've got so much going on in their head as well that they don't, you know, they don't think. There's so much, there's so many hormones, and their skin is changing, and everything is happening to them. And I think God loves them. Like, it is a hard time. But boys are worse than girls. Girls are kind of, girls are nearly gone the other way. They're nearly gone to hygiene extremes. But I do think boys suffer a little bit with the hygiene, all right, you know.
How dare you?
And the changing the beds. I know myself, my friends have teenagers, and they say, like, it's like the bed clothes would want to be like the shroud that you're in before they take them off, you know? That they have to go in and take the cup and the plate and the whole lot out of the bedroom.
The bed clothes. Actually, just definitely, finally, and I wish you a good weekend then. I remember when my son was born, and I remember the district nurse would come in when the baby is so, so tiny. And I remember she was chatting, this is a long, long time ago, my wife used to wear a thing called Trésor perfume at the time, and she was making, they were just having a very interesting chat that never left me, and she said, you know, you've got beautiful perfume, and Luke was in my wife's arms very up close and tight, swaddled, you know, and she said to her that, you know, if anything were sadly to happen to you today or tomorrow or next week, or if you sadly died or passed away, that, and your son would never have known you, that he could be walking down a street in his 20s or his 30s, right? And he could pass somebody, walk into a room and smell Trésor perfume, and he would get a good feeling and a good vibe from it, because he would associate the smell with, you know, being, you know, very, very smell. He wouldn't know why, but it would just, for some reason, remind him of a beautiful time, or make him feel comfortable and safe.
Yeah, smell is very important. My mum used to wear a fragrance called Isatis by Givenchy. And, you know, for a long time after she died, anywhere I went that I ever smelt it, it would always remind me of her. And my dad used to wear, and they still have it now, this fragrance called Wood Spice from Marks & Spencer. He had really sensitive skin, but he used to put this, it was like an aftershave splash that he'd put on after he shaved, because he was old school, he shaved every single day. And, you know, sometimes I'd go into Marks and Spencer's and I'd smell it and I'd go, oh my God, that just smells
there
like my dad.
Yeah,
so it's such a, smell is so emotional. Like,
but the fact that you could be only a few days old, just out of the womb, and you, do you know what I mean?
I think 100%. And you see it with them, like when I go out to my sister's house, sometimes it smells like the way that my home used to smell, because she cooks the same way that my mom did. So it's amazing. It's such an emotional thing.
Yeah. So talking about emotions, and definitely I'll let you go after this. You mentioned things that people gravitate to, and maybe it could be a perfume or it could be an aftershave or a cologne or something. I the worst thing that can ever happen to you, right, is and it happened to me, you can absolutely fall in love with an aftershave. And for me, it was the original Lacoste. This is the original one from the 80s one.
Yes.
It's kind of the green.
It had the
green and white bottle.
The crocodile and the.
Correct. They brought up maybe 15 or 20 different versions of the stuff, but they just stopped making it, right? And to be honest with you, I mean, there are bigger things going on in the world, particularly as we talk about, you know, Daffodil Day and what have you. But they just stopped. And the only place that you can find 20 or 25 year old bottles of this stuff now is online on eBay for 200 and 300 and 400.
Yes.
Why do they do that? Discontinue something that people love.
It's to do with supply and demand, and it's to do with how the market goes. And another thing that we're noticing a lot, well, that I hear a lot, is they're the access to the ingredients that are in it might have changed. So it might be too expensive, or it might be. So I'm not sure that was maybe.
Because, I mean, maybe something
one
from the 80s just goes out of vogue and it's just not.
I think, and you know what?
Popular.
I think, sorry now, Neil, I think you're probably a bit behind the times as well.
I just liked it.
That sort of strong smell, I think. Do you know what I've noticed is that this is interesting, is that I think a lot of the fragrances for men have got quite feminine. Like, that was a very masculine fragrance.
Do you know the fragrance?
I do. I worked in fragrance for a long time, and I remember it. And it was. I remember the bottle. I could tell you it was a square bottle with a kind of rectangular top on it.
Correct. Yeah.
It
was
lovely. Very, very, very masculine fragrance.
And just for the record, I would not spend 250 or 350 euro on a secondhand bottle of it online. For the record.
Yeah, and it would be gone off anyway by now.
It probably would be. There'd be clumps of stuff down on the end of it. Anyway, listen, we covered a lot of ground. Have a great weekend. Good to catch up as always.
Thanks, Neil.
Cheers, Mary Jane. Take care. Back after the break. Get involved in the conversation. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Oh, and by the way, if you've got a bottle of unopened 80s Lacoste, do let me know. I'll make an offer.
0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Just with my chat there with regards to scent and perfumes with Glamity Jane. Let me get back to the phone lines on people who can associate scent with memories. And that's an amazing strength, actually, the things you can associate and not know the reasons why. But I think Martina does. Martina, good morning.
Good morning.
And it was the fact that your mam died and passed away. You were only 4, is that right?
Yeah.
And what?
And the scent.
And this, what was... So it was the perfume you recall, is it?
Yeah.
Right, go ahead, go ahead.
A scent has an awful effect. I spent years, I went into caches. I got YouTube, Estee Lauder, YouTube, the whole lot. But when you happen to speak about Jack, with Paula.
Yeah, Luke, yeah.
Oh, Luke,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, you're all right. You remember, let me just pick up on what you were saying. You lost your mother when you were 4, but you always remember the scent of her perfume.
I spent years tracing it, and I found it.
Oh, you did find it?
It was actually. It was Lily of the Valley. Lily of the Valley.
Even I know that. Lily of the Valley would be a quite old scent, wouldn't it?
Yes. Well, I'm fair old myself now.
So how long ago... Okay, well, fair play to you for hanging in there. How long ago was it since your mam died, for instance?
Oh, well, 50 years.
Okay, so 50 years. And tell me this, you remember her perfume, but you didn't know what it was. Would you be going around and maybe you might be in a room or talking with other women or walking down the street and you might smell it from time to time?
I've often stopped people on the street and asked them what perfume they're on.
Yeah, strangers.
Yes, complete strangers. And even the last caller that was on there, she said she went into the body shop. Do anyone remember White Musk?
Oh yeah, that was hugely popular. It was taken off the market and they think they're reintroducing it again now.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I've tried every other, but it was a small little... It was Lily of the Valley.
And how did you manage to find it eventually then? Did you just go in, spend your life smelling perfumes?
Yes. Or asking people on the street.
And did somebody tell you eventually the name of it?
Well, my eldest sister did.
How did she find out?
She knew the bottle. She was way older than I was. I was a baby.
And did you go in somewhere and describe the bottle?
Yes.
In Cashers, was it?
And, you know, you can try it. You can go from, you know, you can go from Estee Lauder to...
All the different concession stands, yeah. And did you do that?
I did. And I found it.
And how does it make
Lily of the Valley.
How does it make you feel now? Do you wear it?
I do.
How does it make you feel?
Very good.
Yeah.
And I was just going to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Throwing back at you.
Yeah.
When Luke was there with Paula.
Yeah.
What did Kathy, what was her perfume when she wore carrying Kathy?
Oh, I can't remember. Probably Trésor as well, I would think, because it was only a couple of years later. So I would say still Trésor. Trésor.
Yeah, do you know something? Even you were back in the old Urnville.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I'd say it myself.
Yeah.
And...
Were you working there or were you having a baby there?
Both.
All right. Okay. At the same time.
Both. You can do more things at one time. We're women. Right. We're women.
Okay. Well,
we're women. We can actually do. We can multitask.
Well, it's nice. It's nice to catch up with you, and I'm delighted that you tracked down your mammy's scent, Lily of the Valley. Well done. Well done. Take care, Martina. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. What a response we had last night when we posted. Mary was talking about DIY disasters yesterday. We were chatting with Simone, and I was telling him, would you ever install your own washing machine? It's fairly straightforward. There's a blue hose and there's a red hose, and then there's another fatter hose, which is the waste disposal water. You just attach them up and away you go. Of course, even in that I was wrong, because you have to take off the washer so that the drum will spin, and if you didn't, then you'd be in big, big trouble. So we're asking you guys as to what your biggest DIY disasters were. We got a lot of response online, both by text and by call. So let me do some of those. We got a lovely prize, which I'll tell you about in a few minutes' time, for the best DIY disaster story. But Sally, good morning.
Hiya, Neil. How are you?
Your DIY disaster, please. And you might win yourself a €350 voucher for Swan Beds on Vickers Road in Toker for a brand new bed. So give me your story.
I was small. I'm the youngest of eight, and my sister, she would have been the second oldest, was babysitting me. And she was after putting me in the bath. She was going out with a lovely fella, and apparently he came from a very, very posh family.
Oh, well, so important.
Posh we were from the Glen. And so she had the whole house scrubbed from top to bottom for your man coming up. So, of course, I was in the bath, and I drowned the whole place, so she threw a towel down to keep the floor dry. So next your man is coming up the road and coming in the pass, and she spots him. She ran in, grabbed the towel, but she didn't know half the towel was under the bathroom door. She pulled the door, and the door came off the hinges and went straight out through the bathroom window.
What?
Now, at the time, Neil, in the Glen, now that was back in the 80s, we had sheds in the front of the houses, you know?
Yeah.
And the door was like a seesaw. It was up and up. My mum and dad were in the pub. Your man just didn't know where to look. I am telling you now, like, she was a ticket. My dad called her the Hulk. She died 12 years ago, but that name stuck to her.
And did the posh boyfriend see this door flying out the window?
Oh, he saw the last. He saw the last. And apparently now, according to her, he was a vision.
And did he stick around long term, short term? Was she with him for long?
It was short term. And you know what? My another sister actually met him out of the blue a couple of weeks ago. And like, they were going out there. Had a great crack. To be honest now, he was meant to be a lovely fella. And, you know, but that's what happened for her. But things like that always happen for her, you know, because she was nearly 6 foot. And like, she was size 9'2". Do you know someone who looked awkward?
She didn't know her own strength then, clearly, if she could manage to. Or else the door wasn't all that secured on the hinges, one or the other.
No, Neil, if anyone wanted something moved in the house, they used to call her. She could throw it up in the back. You know what I mean? She could lift bunk beds and wash her dryers, everything. There was no matter. Like,
lucky,
you know?
She didn't throw you out the window of the house.
Do you know what? She probably would have. She would have, because, do you know what? She was mad about him. I was laughing last night when I saw that. No, because
even that's got its own little story. You know, people who come from humble beginnings, and the boyfriend is from a wealthy, rich family, probably maybe down the Blackrock Road or something, and you'd be trying to put on the best behaviour and make an impression, you know. And what does it matter at the end of the day, like, in all fairness?
And I mean, there was eight of us in a three-bedroom house. Like, you know.
Chaos.
So you could imagine, you know.
Imagine the chaos. But, I love it. Yeah. Thanks, Sally. Stay listening. Thank you, Laura. Good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Yeah, is this one of those ones that involves tins of paint?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. My husband, he's a little bit taller than me now, because I'm 5 foot nothing, and he's taller than me. And the sitting room ceiling had to be painted. So I said to him, is there any chance you could do that? Because I'd be up and down the ladder. Yeah, he said, not a bother. So he went in and he did it, and he came back. Oh, he said, that's done there now, if you want to go in and check it. So I went in to check it. And not only had he painted the ceiling, he'd painted the couch, the floor, the curtains, the television, everything was destroyed in little white splatters everywhere.
Oh my God.
It took me about 2 hours, two and a half hours with the wipes to go around and clean everything. Needless to say, he was never, ever, ever asked to paint again in the house.
He just went slapping it on and splashing it all over the four walls, all the curtains, the carpets.
He was the bee's knees and the donkeys and the whole lot, and everything was destroyed.
He did that in purpose, you know. He did that in person.
You know what? He probably did. It could have been a very tactical move.
Yeah, so that he'd never be asked to do something like that again.
Yeah, I think it could have been, but oh my good God, it took me ages.
I did that years ago, and I was barred and banned from painting for the rest of my life, although I painted a little porch in Kerry at the weekend, but that was the first time I was allowed to put a paintbrush in my hand in 20 years, I'd say. 25 years.
Yeah, well, he's the same now. He's not allowed to do it no more. It's an absolute disaster. He is unbelievable.
He's one step ahead of you. What about, so who does the painting now? You with an extra long ladder?
Me. Yeah, me with the long handle now, you see, the invention of the big long handle.
Your husband wants to push back against your memory of events, and he says, ask her about the time she hung wallpaper upside down.
Oh, for God's sake, he didn't.
Yeah, he did, yeah. So it was probably flowery wallpaper, and you had the flowers growing down instead of up, is it?
I did, yeah, I was doing the wallpaper like that now, and I had it all done, and I was doing it, and I thought that Galavosius now, thinking I was everything and anything, I stood back to admire it, and one of the kids said, "Man, that's upside down." And I went, they said, "Man, that's upside down." I said, "It couldn't be upside down." And they said, "Look at it." And yeah, lo and behold, it was upside down. But you know what? It stayed there.
For how long?
It stayed there till the next lass had to walk over.
So everybody that walked into the front room with the wallpaper had to walk in on their hands.
What do you call it?
Doing handstands.
It was in my daughter's bedroom, so I didn't have to look at them every day anyway. So
you have some nerve to be going on about your husband Mark, and you wallpapered the room upside down.
Yeah. Well, he actually used to do the DIY, and I was asking him for years and all the story to hang a few little shelves for me. I wanted to put a few pot plants on it, then. He wasn't doing it, and his mom wasn't doing it. So I thought I'd teach him a lesson that I put them up myself, and I would purposely put them up crooked so he'd come in and go, "Oh, for God's sake," and he'd fix them. And I had another few for him to do. So he came home. He was actually up for a hurling match in Dublin, watching the match, and he came home and he looked at me and he went, "Geez, you did a fine job in them shelves." And they were up forevermore.
Yeah, I know. You got a wonky house.
I have your upside down rooms and crooked floors and spotted ceilings and floors, yeah.
All right, well, you're in the doghouse as much as he is, but thanks for the memories, Laura. Thank you. Stay listening. Yeah. That's Laura and Sally. Actually, one more paint-related one for you. Jenny says, I opened the loft, which for many of us would be the attic, I suppose. I opened the loft to get some red paint out of the attic, and it fell on top of me and opened on the way down. I could have auditioned for the film Carrie. Red paint as well, remember. Maria says, myself and my friend had our own little apartment. We loved it. I painted bubbles in the bathroom and spots of colour on my bedroom wall. And it was fab. The kitchen door was acting up one day. And like the strong, independent woman I was, I said I'd try fixing it. Delighted with myself, I took off all the handles, fixed the thing, put back on. It took a pair of us a while before we realised I put the handles back on backwards. But she has more. Maria says, himself hung a floating shelf behind the TV for the Wi-Fi box. What is a floating shelf? The box would have slid off. It was that lopsided. He was boasting to our little girl the week before that he built the holiday homes and hotels in Fota when he was a carpenter. If you got wonky shells down in Fota, now you know the reason why.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Tell you the kind of stories I'm talking about. Wallpaper upside down. I once assembled, you know, you come and get, you assemble the wardrobe yourself, big huge one. I once assembled it back to front and inside out. Don't ask me how. All of the screws fit and everything. It was only when I stood back and looked at it, I had to take the whole thing apart again. That was a long, long time ago. Belinda says, when we first moved into our house, I wanted everything done straight away. I asked my partner to put something in the attic. He said he'd do it later. Me being me, thought, feck it, I'll do it myself. So my sister, myself, and my niece headed over to the house. We're going to move into a new house. I climbed the ladder up to the attic. My sister started handing me up stuff while my niece was in the bedroom. I never knew, says Belinda, that you couldn't walk around up in the attic.
Next of all, my niece starts shouting at my sister, "Mum, Mum, Mum, Auntie B's legs are hanging out of the ceiling." It's so funny looking back on it, but we were dreading telling my partner there was a hole in the ceiling for nearly a year. Lesson learned, be patient. It's a lesson very much learned that you actually can't, unless you floor the attic. Unless you floor it, you can't walk around up there.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Let me catch up on texts from different topics this morning with regards to checkpoints or the craziness of driving. I drive daily for work all over the country, averaging 5,000 or 6,000 kilometres per month. That, my friend, is a lot of driving. I've been in this job for nearly 3 years and I've never once been stopped at a checkpoint or anything. I drive to Limerick, Galway, Dublin, Kilkenny, Carlow, Waterford weekly. Never seen a single checkpoint. That is astonishing. I don't know whether that's just like just kind of bizarrely lucky or unlucky or whatever, but that is amazing. Why isn't there a special mobile unit with a C-reg that would catch them, as opposed to a special mobile unit with what? A D-reg, is it? I do see people being pulled over. Like, I see it regularly on the South Ring, and they're being pulled over by plane cop cars. They've got no signage on them whatsoever, except the blue lights on, and they're just regular cars. I see people pulled over all the time. And then, as to whether you prefer buttons or the touchscreen, I think touchscreens can be quite dangerous. They're very fiddly and they don't always work and you're always banging at them and you're taking your eyes off the road. Bluetooth has, and also that led us on then to why they took CD players out of cars. Bluetooth has replaced tapes. Bluetooth has replaced CDs as today's in-car entertainment systems, and it's way better. You can play your favorite tracks on your smartphone and also listen to podcasts, etc., etc., etc. Yes, you can. But I suppose to some extent, it just makes your CD collection null and void if you wanted to listen to them in your car. On luxury items, you're talking about designer handbags. Yes, we were. We were talking about the Birkin bag there with Calamity Jane. Some jewelers do the very same thing with Rolex watches. If you want a Rolex watch, they might say to you, your wife might like a necklace. Come on, really? You have to buy something relatively substantial before they sell you the Rolex watch. I think that's an urban myth. I never heard of that. And I know a lot of people in the business. But what I have heard from those selling designer watches, particularly the Rolex watches, is that they are very hard to get. There's a waiting list for a lot of them, particularly the Mariner ones. And you find people coming from overseas. I know of jewelers who have sold watches in Cork to people who have come over from other countries in the European Union to buy them. There's such a shortage. Hi, Neil. This is one of the things that is wrong with the world, isn't it? We're so concerned with material things. Designer bags that mean nothing other than I had money, I borrowed money to buy a bloody bag. Meanwhile, there are thousands of children dying in Gaza. Our society is disgusting. It's like the Hunger Games. The contrast between our two realities is stomach-churning. I can't disagree with any of what you're saying with regarding the inequity of the world and the cruelty and the killing and the famine, and particularly what's going on in Gaza and in Palestine. I understand exactly what you're saying, but I would still defend people to buy whatever they wish with the money that they own, if it's hard-earned. Not gangsters now, right? I'm not talking about the gangsters. I'm talking about genuine people. Some people set their sights on something. It may be a material thing, but they might say to themselves, you know, when I have enough, I'm going to keep working. I'm going to keep working. I'm going to treat myself at such an age. And it can be something that they might look forward to buying for themselves when they reach an age and they feel, okay, I've achieved a lot. I've always wanted this and I'm not going to go and get it. Don't you think? 4711 was the scent for me. I worked in the Oyster Tavern in the mid-80s, and an elderly lady that worked in the bar for about 50 years used to wear 4711, but she called it 4711. It's one of the greatest regrets ever. I never had a drink, nor did I ever have any food in the Oyster Tavern. I think I was in there once when I was very, very small, but didn't actually get beyond the front entrance. But I often regretted that I never knew what it was like to experience the Oyster Tavern. And then DIY disasters. Me and my dad painted a church in County Cork. We'd taken down all of the stations of the cross. They were all in... I'm only seeing this for the first time. They were all in Roman numerals, Roman numbers. And didn't we get the first two right? 1 and then 1-1. And then we got all the rest wrong when we were putting them back up. The top priest and another priest came in after, and they blessed themselves with the shock, says Nick.
the church. You cursed the church. I'm assuming you took them all down, put them all the right way back up again. Anyway, keep those coming. Text 0868104106. We got calls on the way. A crazy Cork lady was recently over in New York for the St. Patrick's Day parade. Her name is Shirley O'Rourke. We want to shame her after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Shirley O'Rourke, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you today?
How are they all in the Big Apple? Are they surviving your arrival?
Just about, I think. I think I've gone a little bit famous.
Well, you're the talk of the parish here, anyway. And I hear you're. You haven't been arrested yet, no?
Not at all. Not yet.
Yeah, well, there's time yet. They might just nab you at the airport. You'd never know, you know? They might wait for the last minute.
Well, you never know. Once he's a nice-looking fella, I wouldn't mind.
A nice fella in uniform will do very well. And hopefully the handcuffs...
will do nicely.
And the handcuffs won't be too tight, right?
Oh, God, I know. Yeah, I know.
So this...
Oh, it was hilarious.
It certainly... I'm looking at the video here, and you look like royalty in the parade, but I don't want to jump ahead. Just talk us through the plan, which you pulled off so excellently. Go ahead.
So there was actually no plan. I was in a bar, a mutual friend of ours, Thomas McCarthy, on the Long Acre.
I knew he'd be up to it, Chad. He was behind all this, I suppose. Yeah.
So we were in with him, we had a breakfast and we were watching a couple of games on the TVs, and then all of a sudden we looked and the parade was on. So we said, God, we better head down to that parade before it's over.
Right.
We walked down, just walked up the street, and there was a pipe band. I thought they were finished, and he just said, oh, whereabouts are you from? And we said, oh, Cork. And he said, oh, what branch are you from? And I just went, oh, Jesus.
Special branch.
Credit Union. I said, Blackpool Credit Union. So then there was another group of girls in front of us. They had the tricolour sashes on them, and they were saying, oh, how are you getting on? And we said, oh, grand. And next thing they said, all right, enjoy the day. And they started marching. Yeah. So I went, oh, Jesus. We started marching at noon no more, and we were up on Fifth Avenue.
But you had to jump a barrier to get out into that part of the parade, didn't you?
And I thought, we never jumped a barrier. We just walked behind the pipe band.
I'm told that you picked up a tricolour in Deals, did you? Is that Deals on Alvar Plunkett Street or the Grand Parade or where?
Do you know where I got those now? I was out in the Muskerry Arms the night before having dinner, and Gary, that owns the Muskerry, he gave them to me.
And the long green coat, where did that come from?
That came from Virgo Boutique in Cork.
Okay. And you're walking along, you're marching along, and all your airs and graces, waving at the people like as if you're... I don't know. What do you think? I nearly said the President of America, but they already have daft people as president, so you wouldn't be any improvement there.
Well, I was kind of looking around to see if I was going to be arrested, so I just wanted to keep walking.
people are cheering and clapping and everything. Is that for you?
Cheering and clapping, and we were waving the flag, and we went over and we gave the kids the flags. They went nuts. So for the flag, they were like, oh, thank you so much.
So you were giving flags away as well?
Yeah.
How many flags did you actually have as you were marching along?
Jesus, we had about five each, I'd say.
So there's somebody else with you. There's some character with you, and he's saying, wave, Shirley, wave to the people, wave to the people. Who's
that? That's my husband.
Oh, that right? Okay.
Oh, so and I had another friend with us as well, Teresa, and I said to her, how in the name of God are we going to get off at the street?
How long did you march for?
About 15 minutes.
15 minutes of fame. They say we all are entitled to 15 minutes of fame. That was yours.
Oh, well, I don't think I want it again. Oh, I saw a barrier opened there was two cops standing, and I saw a barrier, and I went, right, this is the minute now we can get out of here. And I just walked over and I said, I'm sorry, I'm not feeling well. And he goes, oh, just walk down here, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I know.
And that's how we got off.
Because it's invitation only. To march in the parade is invitation only. So you're a Cork gatecrasher. Oh. Are you north side or south side?
I'm originally south side. I'm living in the north side. Oh. I'm living in Larchfield in the north side.
So they're going to need two.
I know, you couldn't make it up.
They're going to need two sets of handcuffs. So at where are you going out of JFK? Better not say what airport you're going out of. We could tip them off as to where you're going.
Oh
home
yeah,
from.
We'll say not. The TV crews might be there to witness. He may be arrested.
How's the rest of your break going though? What else have you been up to? What kind of devilment?
Well, we went to the Wolf Tones. The Wolf Tones were playing on the 16th after the parade. Fantastic. They were doing their farewell tour. We did that. That was amazing. And just the usual bit of shopping. And Tom's looking after us very well, of course.
You're in Longacre and he's looking after you with a few bevs and some nice food. He's got another pub, actually, you could catch some free drink off from down in Smithfield. Head down there next.
Oh, we were there. He brought us down there as well.
Did you watch any of the soccer at the weekend over there?
Well, through one eye, maybe.
The other eye was watching rugby.
The other eye was looking out for the cops.
I'd say looking into a half-empty glass, I'd say, Shirley.
Oh, God, I know, but it was. I tell you now, it was the funniest day of our lives, I have to say.
And this isn't a first time for you in New York or anything, no? Have you been before?
No, I have. I have been before, yeah.
So you know all of the shopping haunts. Where would you go? Would you go to Macy's or would you go play other places?
Went to Macy's and we did Jersey Gardens this morning.
Do you think that's worth it, Jersey Gardens, incidentally? Do you think there's bargains there?
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
I got a Michael Kors bag this morning. It was $558 and I got it for $111.
Oh my God, you made out like a bandit, didn't you? When are you coming home?
I'm home on Thursday morning.
Yeah, and you know that you've lit up Facebook and things like that. I'm quite sure that your own. Have you got your own Facebook page and Instagram page and everything?
I don't have Instagram or anything like that. I just have Facebook.
Okay. All right.
I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe they might use you as the Grand Marshal of the next Cork parade. And if they don't, maybe you might get a special invite back to the NYC parade. You can.
I better get my coat dry cleaned, I'd say.
You want to get a wig because my sources in the NYPD say they're looking out for you. So I'd get a wig and a pair of dark glasses.
I'll take you up on that offer.
All right. Well, look, tell Tom I said to look after you. I know he is. He's a great bit of stuff.
Of course.
And enjoy the rest of the trip, all right?
We're meeting him there later on, definitely. And thanks for taking my call. Thanks for
talking. Have a good one, Shirley. Take care. Thanks for being such fun. All the best. Bye.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
And be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. Patricia, we're looking for you. I want to hear the story on the air about the time your husband tried to fix the gas cooker down in Youghal and the whole thing went pear-shaped. It's a great story of DIY and we want to see if we can get you on the air to tell it yourself. Meanwhile, it's an inspiring story. We were talking earlier on about designer bags and the things that people buy. It all started with Birkin bags that go from 10 grand to 460,000 euro and people spending money on things like this. If you earn your money, then it's you're entitled to spend it on whatever you want. It's nobody else's business. But it's a lovely email. So I was just listening to the lady on air with you. That would be Glamity Jane about the Birkin bag. Here's a funny story for you. My grandfather was the founding owner of a ladies' fashion manufacturing company called Nina Models. They supplied certain high-end stores like Brown Thomas and a lot of high street shops like Dunn's and Penny's for years. My granddad passed away 3 years ago. He was a self-made multi-millionaire. He came from absolutely nothing and he would only be seen out in a Nike peaked cap, Nike Air Max runners and a shirt and chinos. Nothing flashy at all, ever. He supported charity in India, where he came from, and some in Ireland too, where he lived. He came to Ireland in the late 1950s with absolutely nothing from India. He used to go door to door selling clothes and eventually built up enough money over the years and opened a small factory. It boomed with a lot of hard work and eventually he opened numerous factories in Donegal and employed hundreds and hundreds of people. I think the whole flashy fashion is fine and of course show off what you have if you want to. But in my opinion, not everyone that has money flashes it. Some people are happy with the simple things in life, like my grandfather. You could be sitting on a train, Neil, or a bus beside a multimillionaire and you'd never even know it. Not everyone with money is flashy or needs a Birkin bag or flashy things. Some people are just happy with a smile and simple things in life. I think that's beautiful. I think it's very inspiring. I know a couple of people actually, and I'm quite sure maybe others do, who are multimillionaires. And if you were to look at them, it's not I'm saying anything in a disparaging way, but they don't flash it and you'd never think it. So I understand what you mean when you say you could be sitting next to somebody on a bus who's a multimillionaire and you wouldn't necessarily know it. But that story, because Claire checked it out, is a story of a man by the name of Michael Sharma, who came from India in the 1950s. He was remembered as a gentleman and a great teacher following his death. Managing director of a clothing company, he died in Spain just 4 years ago at the age of 90. And he did build up a huge brand and did stock all of his fashions in Dunn's and Littlewoods and Brown Thomas and Ayrshire, and did employ hundreds and hundreds of workers in Donegal, but never flashed the cash. I think it's a beautiful story. And I'll come back to more stories like that, and indeed many of the DIY disasters. But I was due a catch-up with Vinod Bajaj. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. He was on air with me back in November because he loves to walk, and walked and walked and walked. I actually think that Vinod, at the age of 70, was doing all of this walking, like over 40,000 kilometres, so that he could get out of the house and not have to do DIY jobs. But that's just my own story. Vinod, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. Good to talk to you again.
And you too. Listen, what do you think of that story about the businessman Michael Sharma, a fellow countryman of yours who came over here in the 50s? Isn't it a lovely story?
It's a lovely story because I knew Michael Sharma for a long time, okay?
Wow.
And I know, yes, wow. I met him once or twice with him. He was a very nice gentleman.
Wow, did you know? And was he a very unassuming multimillionaire, apparently?
No, he has a lot of money. I wouldn't know whether he's a multimillionaire, but he had a lot of money. But he was a very simple man.
Yeah, yeah. Worked hard, wasn't driven by the money, employed hundreds and hundreds of people. Isn't it a small world that you knew him?
Yeah, the one other thing, Neil, is very important is, okay, that, you know, when people come from India, they make a lot of money, okay, they don't forget their roots. For example, I came 47 years ago. I have not forgotten my roots.
Do you go back a lot to Punjab?
Probably not lately because my two brothers are in UK, my sister is in Canada, my mother is with me, she's 97 years old. So I don't have a good reason to go back there, okay? But I do go maybe once every 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one of the things that amazes me about India, because I've had experience, not personally, but I know of people, friends of mine, and my wife has some very close Indian friends. But the size of the weddings, like you could have thousands at a wedding that could go on for 3 or 4 days that could cost a serious amount of dosh, right?
Yeah, that is true. Okay, the wedding is a very, very special occasion, and there are big weddings, okay? So generally, probably in Ireland, if there's about 150, 200 people,
that would be a lot.
A good wedding. Yeah, but in India, there are a lot of relations and friends and neighbors, so it's a big occasion for any parent to have their children get married. And in fact, they do contribute a lot for the wedding, if they can afford it. So in that way, yes, it celebrates for 3-4 days. You'll have the boys' side, the girls' side, two parties, two reception, first civil marriage, then the real marriage. So it can go on for 3-4 days.
Why not? We thought we were good to party. You'd leave us in the halfpenny place. But anyway, how have you been since we spoke? I remember when we chatted, you spoke about the 40,000 kilometres you walked over a 4-year period in Limerick just to get out of the house, right?
Yes, that is right, yeah. In fact, the last time when I spoke to you, it was not 40,000, it was 80,000 kilometres.
You did it twice, didn't you?
Yeah, I did it twice. And then I wrote to Guinness Book of Records sometime around middle of November. Generally, they take about 12 weeks because my application was a standard application, not a non-standard like a priority application. Because if you want to go for a priority application, you have to give €850. And I said, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
So they take about 12 weeks to respond.
And tell me about your application. You had walked 100,000 kilometers in a number of years, and you wanted to get a Guinness Book of Records for what?
Just want to say that my application was the greatest cumulative distance walked on foot solo.
Okay, sounds good to me. What did they say to your application?
So they came back to me after 12 weeks, sometime around early March, and they said we don't monitor that walk for such a long duration. And then they said to me okay, that will be very, very difficult to verify to a required level of certainty. And so they said, okay, you know, it'll be difficult because it's such a long period. So I went back to them. I gave them three examples. I said, hello, Guinness. You have a guy, George Megan. You have a guy, George Megan, who got the Guinness record in 1983 for walking 30,000 kilometers in 6 years, number one. Number two, I said in 1974, you had David Kunz. He walked 20,000 kilometers and took him 4 years. And listen to me, the last one. You have a guy called Arthur, bless it. He walked 64,000 kilometers. It took him 40 years. That was in 1969 to 2013. So I said, hello, Guinness. You said, okay, that you don't monitor for such a long period. How come these three people are still in your database as a Guinness record holder? They said, well, if they were to apply again, it will not meet our requirements. So, but because they've been already awarded the Guinness record, we would like to honor them.
They couldn't take them back, kind of thing.
Yeah, I said, that's a very inconsistent rule. That, you know, and I said, okay, I've done 86,000 kilometers. And you're telling me, okay, that you can. And by the way, I said in 1974, 1983, how did they verify? Did they write their walk in a diary, in a piece of paper?
Yeah.
How did you verify that? And I said, I was very, very disappointed. Okay, now, I said, I'm disappointed not because you didn't give me. I'm disappointed. You're saying, okay, that it'll be very hard to verify. I said, I can get you 50 independent witnesses who will vouch for my walk, seeing me working every day. Making the long story short, they are Guinness. They got their own brand there. And they said, well, okay, well, you know, we would like to. But when I said, look, I'm disappointed. Okay, you didn't even give me an opportunity to submit my record for 2,700 days in my mobile phone.
Oh, hang on a second. You do have kind of smart technology then to back up the 86,000 kilometers.
So for every single day of the last 2,700 days, I have a record of my walk by hour, the distance traveled, number of steps taken, and number of calories shed for every single day.
Wow.
I said, I've got it, okay, now. So then they said to me, okay, how do we know that somebody didn't assist you? I said, what do you mean by that? He said, maybe the one day you walked and the second day need walk from clock.
Sharing the watch, sharing the mobile phone. And that's a shame. They would say that for them to be able to verify your record, they would have had to have an official monitor and walk with you for the entire duration of the 86,000 kilometers, perhaps.
So, yeah, so somebody had to come with me for 7.5 years and say, okay, I'm watching you. I said, come on, guys. You know, I said, I'm really surprised that you're asking for that. And then I said, okay, how come the people in 1974, 1983, and 2013 were able to prove it to you? And again, as you know, the Guinness, you know, they've got their own brand, and I'm not disappointed. That's okay, fine. I started walking for my health reason. I'm very healthy. I'm probably the most fittest person at the age of 74, and I will continue to walk and complete my 100,000 in April, and I will go back to them again.
And tell me this, did you ever estimate, say, for instance, how many calories you would have burned, even on a daily basis or a cumulative total?
Daily basis, I burned about 1,400 to 1,500 calories. And till today, I burned 3.4 million calories.
How do you know that? How do you know that?
It's in my digital phone every day and it's cumulative. Okay, now. So basically, I eat about 2,600 calories. I shed 1,400 calories every day. So only about 1,200 calories goes into my body and I'm super fit.
Okay, so you walked 54.6 million steps, 8,300. This is an old number I have now. You've updated
that's
it.
Old number, yeah, that's the old number. So, for example, the first time when I completed my journey to the circumference of the earth, it was 54 million steps. Second time when I did it, it was 103 million steps. And as of today, I'm tracking at 111 million steps.
That is, so you have walked the circumference right around the widest part of the earth twice.
Twice and 6,000 kilometers more than that.
Oh my God. How many pairs of shoes did you get through, do you think?
I use roughly about 3 a year. So in the last 7.5 years, I've used about 21.
Do you have a particular brand of shoe or sneaker? Is it like Skechers or what?
I use Asics, okay, because they are very comfortable for the walking one. And in fact, I was planning to write to Asics to say, will they sponsor me for the shoes, free shoes?
They should do.
Are you? Yes. I mean, so are you going to continue with this? I mean, there's more to do, is there?
No, not necessarily. I want to get to 100,000 kilometers because that will be the real record that no human being would have walked 100,000 kilometers.
Well, I'm happy to share your statistics if you send me screenshots of them on social media. We'll certainly share and celebrate your achievement. And if you're a Guinness drinker, stop drinking Guinness and start drinking Murphy's Irish Stout instead. That'll teach them lesson.
No, I don't drink at all. I don't drink at all. So that's fine. But I've been telling people to stop drinking Guinness.
Put manners on them once and for all. And all of this to avoid housework and DIY work, right?
Absolutely okay now. And as I said, okay, that I go for my walk because if I stay inside the house, I will get a list of things to do, which I don't want to do.
Smart man. Oh my God! Will you stay?
I will send to Kevin the screenshot of all my achievements.
Oh my God! I'd love to share that on your behalf. We could get that online, and it would go down a bomb with people. What an, you must be super fit.
I would say that yes, I feel that I'm very super fit, and again, as I said. My weight is in good shape. I check my weight every day. Every morning when I get up, I go to scale, check my weight. If the weight is within plus or minus half a kg, I'm fine. If my weight is more than half a kg for the previous day, I have to take some action, so I walk a little bit more. And when I have my ice cream on a day because of the cheat day, I will make sure I walk a bit extra to get that ice cream out of my system.
Oh my God, man! I could talk to you all day. Just final question: in all of those steps and all of those walks, was it confined to the streets and the borough of areas of Limerick, or did you walk the burn and stuff like that as well?
No. That okay. It'll be within 10 to 15 kilometers radius of the Limerick one. So probably Limerick City, Anacharty, Bird Hill, National Technological Park. And the problem is okay that if you go too far, if you want to go for a nature's car, you are stuck. So I try to go within a distance. Okay, now if I want to go for a leak or I want to go for a nature's call, at least I'm close to a pub or I'm close to a shopping center.
Oh my God. Stay in touch, will you? For God's sake, don't be a stranger. Send me on all of those screen grabs. I want to have a look at them.
And Neil, I'll be talking to you again when I finish my 100,000 kilometers.
Absolutely. I'll be waiting for you, Vinod. All the best for now. Good luck.
Okay, Neil. Thanks for having me. Take care, my man. Bye.
Super guy.
Bye.
You can't help but laugh along with him. It's a great story. Anyway, for all of the business, pick up the phone 0818 104106. We'll have another chat with Vinod when he hits the 100,000 kilometer mark. Julia Maria is playing us out in studio this morning. We've got live music for you in a few minutes' time, but also your DIY disasters. Do not forget them. James, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
Okay, share it. What did you get up to? This was in the big freeze of 2016. I'm sure they named that storm, or that was it. Like, what was it at the time in 2016? The cold snap.
It was when the big snowfall came in February and March,
okay.
And it sat in on the roads, that kind of stuff.
Right.
In any case, the water went out. No pipes weren't running for 5 or 6 weeks, and that was fine. But the government was giving me hassle over not having a shower, not being able to have any running water, and that kind of stuff. So I thought I'd fix it. So I got some water from work, which is still running down there, 40 litres up to the attic, poured it into the tank, nothing happened, shower didn't come on. Went down, got another 40 litres up to the attic, poured it in, nothing happened. So there was a small tank up there as well, next to the large tank, and I said, look, maybe I'll use that. So went down, got another 40 litres, said, well, it poured into that empty tank that doesn't look like it's been used. She said, yes, I poured it in, the water poured out, down the wall, down into the fuse box, blew all the fuses, electricity went out. So there she is, sitting smelly, in the dark, and I'm left hiding upstairs in the attic after that, to be honest with you.
And what was that second tank for?
It was for nothing. It must have been some overflow tank that just wasn't in use, and I wasn't used to the house or whatever, so it just wasn't ever plumbed in. So it just literally went into the tank and out of the tank just as well.
And who ultimately went in and fixed all the shower and did all the work with the electricity that was not done?
Luckily, I had friends to call on, so, you know, I made a few panicked phone calls at that stage.
I think the secret...
Got it started.
I think the message is, leave it to the professionals, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, and thanks for that, James. Yeah, you were talking... 2016 was the Beast from the East, I think, wasn't it?
Could have been, yeah, that was it.
All right, man, okay. Listen, thanks for that. Keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. We've managed to track down Patricia O'Mahony. Patricia.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
You were on your halls down in Yall. Was it a holiday home, a caravan, a mobile? What was it?
A caravan. Okay. We used to always go down every year, down to Red Barn. I was taken down at 5 of them at the time. And we used to all go down and have a great old holiday. And we do a lot of cooking. And it was, of course, it was a grill, but it was on a bottle of gas, you know?
Yeah, I know it.
So he was in the middle of making dinner. And the flame went very low and I couldn't get it heightened. So the husband, being the man of the moment, Mr. Fix-It, went down on his knees and he was at it a few times. And then all of a sudden there was a big jet of fire out. Oh, he was on his knees trying to, you know, look up into the grill. So
while it was still on now. Fire. While it was still on.
Sorry?
While it was still on.
It was still on, and there was a small flame on it, but Mr. Fix-It was doing the boy and wanted to get it done properly, because we were all starving, and a big jet of flame flew out the top, taking what little hair he had left on top, and shot. He went flying out the back door.
Did he?
No, the mobile, the caravan.
It blew him out the door of the caravan.
It blew him out and blew the top of his hair off.
I mean,
so he had little hair as it was.
I don't know why I'm laughing now. I don't know why you and I find it funny, because at the time it must not have been funny.
He could have been dead and we were all just falling around the place laughing. We just couldn't believe it happened in front of our eyes. He just was flown across. Out the door, and the top of his head was all scorched.
Did he have much hair? Did he have much hair to start with?
It was starting to go that time, but like that put an end to it. He had no eyebrows or eyelashes. Sick all left.
Oh my God! He wasn't going down to Clancy's for a few pints that night.
Yes, he did. We had to put a makeup on him, and there was a bar in the field, so we just put a concealer on him.
You put makeup on him to hide and to mask the scorching.
A bit of eyebrow pencil.
He was handsome.
He nearly killed us, I swear to God. No. But he could have been dead. But all we did was, we just were inconsolable, me and the children, laughing. We couldn't believe it happened in front of our eyes.
What were you laughing at? Like, it could have killed him. He could have been blinded.
But it was so funny, Neil. It only happens to us. It only happens to my family. The things that happens to us. Unbelievable. He was out the door lying on his back on the grass.
You put makeup on him to go for a few pints.
Yeah, and a bit of eyeliner.
And did his hair grow back eventually, and his eyebrows and his head and everything?
No. I still love him though.
It never grew back.
Grass never grew in a busy street, Neil.
Oh my God, there's got to be a prize in it for you on the basis that it did start out as DIY. You can't be messing with gas. You have to get the real professionals in. You really do.
But you know the men, when they're something, you can't be told, like, I'm going to fix it and that. So we left them off.
Well, for you, I have a three.
He says the same today.
What's your husband's name?
Timmy.
Well, tell Timmy he's got himself a brand new comfy bed, mattress and everything to go with it, courtesy of Swan Beds.
His
back is killing him. He needs to be looked after by Swan Beds, and he needs a nice rest.
Very good.
Not at all. Thanks for listening, Patricia, to you and Timmy. Glad I tracked you down. Great story.
Thank you.
Don't be messing with electrics, lads, nor mess with gas or anything like that. So a €350 voucher for Patricia. Thank you to everybody else who got involved. That's from our friends at Swan Beds. They are Cork's only exclusive bed factory and store, and Dave and his team are dedicated to providing their vast knowledge and make sure you get what you need. They're out in Vickers Road in Toker. Thanks, lads. Do appreciate it. That's a lot of fun. It's great to have a lot of fun on a Friday, isn't it? So keep those stories coming, and we'll pick up on more of them next week if you didn't get on air and you would like to get on air. Remember, it is, on a serious note, today is Daffodil Day, and I got some lovely texts from people who are sharing their own stories. I won't forget about them. It could well be
Monday's programme, we return to them by virtue of time, which is against me. We've got live music to play us out as usual on a Friday. And thanks again to Owen Hennessy and Live Music Promotions Ireland. We've got Julia Maria in studio, singer-songwriter from Middleton and East Cork. I think she's got some accompaniment as well, because I see another individual sneaking in on the left-hand side whom I can't see, with a second guitar. So more on that after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
All right, everybody. Oh, a very, very special happy birthday wish. Big greeting to Margaret Hayes from Pollarduff Road, who's a big fan of the show, celebrates her birthday. So happy birthday, Margaret. One of your buddies got in touch and said you're probably listening in Kerry, and it's from all your friends in the Sunday Night Gang. But, and a special song for you, because we got Julia Maria in studio, accompanied by Keelan Kenny. We'll chat with them in a couple of seconds' time. They're armed with guitars and microphones. So this is a self-penned number by Julia Maria. Let's hear it. One, two, three, four.
Wake up, it's 7:45. Somehow I already feel late, but that's just how the wheels been turning for me. Grab a coffee and look alive, and wonder how I'm gonna survive, but that's just how the wheels been turning for me. And I'm on the back foot lately, and I've decided that I don't mind. Let the others run the race while I walk peacefully behind.
Speechless. You wouldn't want the Dixie Chicks to get their hands on that song. They'd steal it away from you.
Thank you very much.
It blows my mind, actually, the last couple of years, the level of talent that we have on Lee's side. You're a Middleton girl. Keelan, where are you from, pal? You're from Ballinhasig?
I'm from Donamore.
Donamore. So yeah. Do you record it with in Keelan's studio?
Yes.
Put the EP together and everything?
Yeah, so we spent the last few months putting an EP together, and the first release will be the first week of May. So
what a voice. That's incredible.
You.
Is that called Wheels Keep Turning, or is it called Backfoot?
Backfoot, but that's a bit of a debate.
I'm in the middle of a debate, because I was saying, I thought she was doing, but it's like, it's just gorgeous.
Thank you very much.
Oh my God, are you gigging?
Yeah, gigging a good bit. We don't have original shows kind of booked in yet, but we're hoping now the summer We'll be playing a lot of original shows. Okay. So stay tuned to the old Instagram and stuff.
And if you've got anything up on Spotify, people can check you out.
Yeah, so I released a full EP during COVID. So I have a full EP up there if people want to listen.
Oh my God, that's fantastic. I'm going to rush you because I'd love to get something else out of you. With about maybe I've got maybe 3 minutes.
Awesome.
If you want to use that musically rather than me taking it up to chat.
Love it.
So we got Keelan Kenny on accompaniment and Julie Maria. I think, is this a Fleetwood Mac cover?
This is, yeah.
Okay, squeeze it in before midday then. Here we go.
Now here I go again. You say you want your freedom. Well, who am I to keep you down?
Julia Maria and Keelan Kenny, you make it look so easy and you so look like as if you're enjoying your talent. And another day it would have been a cello, today it was guitar and vocals. Lovely to have you in studio. It's terrific stuff. That was great. And you can follow everything she does on Spotify, follow her on socials, Instagram for all of the latest updates. Julia Maria with Keelan in studio. That's it, lads. Everything else we'll pick up on Monday. So keep the text coming. Text 0868104106 and we'll pick up business on Monday morning. Have a good day. Have a good weekend. I'll see you Monday.
When Cork talks,
Cork people blow my mind.
They talk to Neil Prendeville
on Red FM.